Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. Khali and I are going to be doing this presentation jointly. So the reason why we started this initiative that we call Not Yet Uhuru is that, as many of you know, South African women are under siege. These are just news clippings from various incidents of a lot of things that have happened to women in South Africa, particularly poor black women in South Africa. And while some of these stories have made headlines, many more have not. South Africa has 8 times the global average of femicide. 1 in 5 women have experienced intimate partner violence, and every 30 seconds a woman is raped in South Africa. So in 2016, Soul City revisioned itself into a social justice organization that focuses on young women and girls. As many people know, we have built a household brand in South Africa using a combination of media with social mobilization and advocacy to address a lot of development and health issues in the country, and have really built a respected brand not only in South Africa but internationally. And for that reason, have basically lent our voice and our brand to try and deal with a number of issues that are facing women. We are embarking on a new venture to utilize the growing online radio space to create, monetize, and distribute content focused on issues relating to women, to young women and girls. And we were very fortunate that last year we were part of a process run by Tsimulukong, the Gem Lab process, where we were selected to basically think about this idea of a feminist radio station. And part of the process saw us partnering with UJFM to have a first feminist radio show, which we called Not Yet Uhuru, as part of their drive time radio show Monday to Friday to test the concept. And at the end of the Gem Lab, we also were fortunate to get further funding from SAMIP, the South Africa Media Innovation Program, where we will work with them to create a podcast channel that will host content created for NYU, which is Not Yet Uhuru, that will in turn be syndicated to broadcast FM stations, both local and national, and also shared online. I'm just going to play you a little clip of what we did. This is one of the episodes on Not Yet Uhuru, for the kinds of conversations that we want to bring to the fore. Intergenerational conversations that
Uhuru Sex With
black
Me
women
show
are having,
also played
but
you
they
the,
are not,
you know, the
out
sweet
there
sounds
on radio.
Of Mposivina with a song titled Black Butterfly. It is the UJFM Driver 95.4, and of course for now it is Not Yet Uhuru, which, you know, airs from 3 till 4. You can join us on a daily basis as we talk about different issues. You're hanging out with myself, Phumzile Ngota,
and I'm here, Lebo Ramafoko, from the Soul City Institute for Social Justice. And our Sex With Me show is all about empowering and educating women about our bodies, our sexual health. We talk sex, relationships, intimacy, love, and pleasure.
Yes, and you're also joined by me, myself, and I, Naledi Chira, and we will be your host this afternoon as we talk about the economics of sex right here on UJFM Drive. Now, what's the first thing to the author that comes to your mind when you think about the economics, or as Lewa said, the politics of sex in South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, we've just had a very heated discussion around what is sex work. I think it's interesting that we are talking about this, because I think when people meet, they assume we've got these codes that we have about what does sex mean.
These
codes are contradictory to each other. So we all want to have this image that, oh, we are all good and we are all having sex for love and intimacy. But in fact, sex can be used as a transaction. Sex can be done to just satisfy you feel. And different people are having different kinds
of sex.
You know?
Yes.
So yeah, and social media has made it even worse.
Sex for money.
You guys are telling me things I did not know.
It was too late. We were actually talking about the hashtag that was making waves last week. Stoko and hashtag I am Stoko.
Yes.
You know, we have two different sides here.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be one for the books. Most definitely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, what Osle was saying to me is that the word stalker is a word that she wouldn't necessarily appropriate for the self.
Absolutely.
Right? Because it's from the male gaze, for male pleasure, on the premise of objectifying women.
Absolutely. It's very passive for
me. Yes.
Our struggle as women is to own our sex and have sex for our own pleasure, if you can be sitting there and saying, I'm going to have sex today because I'm horny and I want to have the sex I deserve.
Yes.
You cannot call yourself stalker.
And then stalker for me is such a passive thing.
Yes.
Something that is like on a shelf that must have somebody who picks it up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find that all words that men use for us to basically shame us are words that we must appropriate to basically use for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
To that, I say no. And also, like it puts the woman as the passive person in it also goes back to the whole thing of blesser and blessees.
Yes.
You know, because men are being positioned as the doers. They bless. Right?
Yeah.
And then the woman must receive.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, also giving sex or taking sex is an act.
Yeah.
It's a doing thing, right? So why is it that we center male positionality when it comes to transactional relationships?
Yeah. So that is my problem with it. And I also think that for us as women, you know, we should not be reactive in the way that we take power about our sexuality. I understood that people were saying, you know, don't moralize this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
All of us can be stalker and all of that.
Yes.
But I think when we start appropriating something that was meant to shame us in that way, can we come? I think we are much more creative than stalker.
We are definitely much more creative. But I think when I was in the situation last week on Twitter, it was basically about taking a collective stance on saying, we are each other as black women, because I also saw that it's something that we fail to do a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, to say, if you're being shamed for being, remember the last time after the IC protest, they were calling us tea girls.
Yeah.
And then we were like, no, every black woman is a tea girl.
Yeah.
Right? Because they always have to work in submissive positions in the workspace, in submissive positions in politics. We are tea girls.
I understand that's the sentiment.
Yes.
But for me, the one that I like, stalker ke maho. Yeah, because if you are going to be calling another woman stalker, start met jo ma. Stalker ke maho.
I come with a disclaimer. I don't know what I had eaten or drunk that day. But these conversations happen, and young women are having these conversations. And around Women's Day in South Africa, they advertise lipstick for half price and all of that. And for us, it's very important that we create conversations, intergenerational conversations, about issues that young women want to talk about, and about things that often young women talk about, but they don't see themselves on the stage. Naledi Chirwa is very interesting because she's an activist. She's got blue hair, she's very young, and she's got a large following. So a lot of times when we did these shows on UJFM, I think it was quite a blessing that we were on campus, and they allowed us to say, start Mejuma. But what was very interesting was that we were in a space where young women were having the conversations that, like the one that we had with Naledi. And although it was a drive time show, we often get this thing, and I think it's mainly about the fear of women in generally, where you say, well, will people listen? We don't know if people are interested in those things. And I think a lot of ways decision makers dumb down audiences and then say it's what audiences want. So while we were on a drive time slot and we were having these conversations, and we had a whole lot of conversations, people, and 60% of the people who listened to us were male, you know, were very interested in the conversations. And some of the feedback we were having, particularly when we were streaming on Facebook, was the fact that they were very curious. You know, we would, for an example, have sex toys and sex games that people play in the bedroom, and you know, the people who have the sex toys would come and demonstrate. And I remember in that episode, it was a Facebook live. You know, you could see it on Facebook, and it was one of the episodes that was really fascinating, because some people said they liked being, is it spanked or smashed? But there was whipping happening there. And that is exactly how Naledi was standing, you know? And for us at that time, it was to test whether or not people will listen to something that is overtly feminist, and whether or not we can make content that is largely serious very interesting. And we hope that, you know, as we go further, we will prove that, you know, audiences are very nuanced and complex, you know, and it is our role as content producers to give them content that is nuanced, because they are able to think for themselves. And we for us, we want to be very overtly feminist. But over to a younger feminist.
So... you may ask why, as for me as a young woman, this is important for me to have such conversations around who we are, where we're going, as a young black woman in the country. And the primary reason for me is I'm that girl. That's me. When I was 6 or 7, and I'm standing in front of you guys now today, and nothing has changed. And this is why we really want to push this content, because it is still not yet Uhuru for the black woman in South Africa. We don't feel safe in this democracy, if it is a democracy. And if I'm not careful and I don't take a stance about being a bold, unapologetic feminist, this will be my daughter. I was attending this picture. I was attending an exhibition that showed what women were wearing when they got raped. This is a 2-year-old, right? So, and that is a jali, like a grandmother's blanket. So this is my grandmother. This is me. This is my daughter. Nothing has changed. Are we accepting this as a status quo for young black women in South Africa? And this is also me. I've been all black with the Duke, you know, I've been for this movement, you know. So this, we were protesting outside Alexander Township, outside the police station. And the interesting thing for me is it's all men and just this little girl here who's saying, stop abuse, abuse is ugly. And but the difference, what we're doing now with Not Yet Uhuru, we're taking all these messages that have been said over and over again and really transforming them into a space that we live in now, which is really a digital space. This is why Not Yet Uhuru exists. So we have described ourselves as South Africa's first unapologetic radio content hub. It will be a mix of radio, talk radio and music. The reason why we have chosen this content or this concept is we want to change the consciousness, and we want our presence to be heard, our voice to be heard. We want a platform that is for us and by us. And I think if we're not careful, young black women, urban women, all these traits, I promise you, are the new voice of liberation in this country. And we want to give them the platform to change the world in which they live in. And so to shift societal norms in favor of gender equality. And the most interesting thing about us is it's intergenerational. You heard there was Mama and there was Naledi, and they're talking about sex. And why that's important for us, we say the elders, the youth may get there faster, but the elders know the road. So we've got the energy as young people, as young girls, we've got the energy, we want to move, but it's very important for us not to leave our elders behind, because they've walked this. They were the ones on the street before we were born. So, and also it's just a balance and a nice mature voice conversation, that because we may be a little bit radical and that's fine, but someone to hone us in when we need to be honed in. Our target audience is black women between the ages of 18 and 35, and the platform really that we're going to use is mainly podcasts, but we want to make it multimedia. So the aim of Not Yet Uhuru is to really create the first digital activism ecosystem, right? So the aim of this ecosystem is to build a digital social movement for feminists. We are a home for feminists where they can feel safe to say the things that they would usually be whipped for and stuff. So how we're going to do this, through our podcast, our writing, blog, photography. We want to start our own feminist Bang Bang Club. Take photographs of women across the country from urban, rural, peri-urban areas and tell their stories. We're going to amplify the feminist and the black woman's voice in the country. And obviously the vlog. The purpose of the vlog really, the podcast is going to talk mainly on structural issues. So structural barriers and what patriarchy is doing on a structural level. The vlogs are going to take those structural or those big subjects that we're discussing on our podcast, and we'll get to see how those affect three young girls in different settings. So we have our Naledi, one of our activists, has just moved to Daung in Northwest. It's a very rural area. So Naledi will move to, we'll show Naledi moving to Daung. We have an Ode to My Hood, which is mainly going to be set up in Mamelodi, but it's going to tell the stories of also our Rise member girls, who I'll get to later. But we also have a girl in Mackenzie. She's a management consultant. She's in Sandton, but her voice needs to be heard because patriarchy in those spaces affect her differently. So we want to hear her speak about equal pay and how she's not getting the Bentley that she deserves. We want the girl in Daung to tell us how there's no clinics around the area and that's why she can't get contraceptives. She can't get contraceptives, she gets pregnant, but she gets vilified for being a teenage mother. What is she supposed to do? Who is supposed to fix that? Those are the questions and those are the kind of conversations that we want to have on Not Yet Uhuru. This is in South Africa, the podcast landscape obviously is still very young. These are some of the statistics in the US and how the US has used podcasting. And you can see that there's potential for a great revenue in the space. So it's $90 million in 2014, and it went, projected to be $395 million by 2020. In South Africa, our only reference right now is Cliff Central. They started in 2014, and they have recently reported that 10 million podcasts have been downloaded. So people are listening to podcasts. So this is a space that we really want to start in, and also the fact that we're not on other mainstream or commercial radio stations means that we can do what we want and say what we want without someone coming to tell us, the BCC, coming to tell us that saying vagina on air is not kosher. We want to talk about those things. And we do want to, the example was the UJFM example, syndicate to mainstream radio. The example that has been done really well in print is Mail and Garden and the Daily Fox. So we want the mainstream radio station to be Melon Garden, and we want to be the Daily Fox. So the voice of the young person, the voice of the young black woman, and what is the young black woman feeling about what's happening in the country, and the ways in which we think we can do that is presenting ourselves as a young woman's desk. And we don't only want to be heard on Women's Month or Youth Month. We want to be on a topic, and we've got a lot to say and a lot of feelings about what's happening in the country. So we could also use our digital platform, our vlogs and our blogs on their website, so they can actually see the lives that we live and who we are as young black women. So we want to how we envision collaborating with community radio stations is that why we see it as important is that a lot of the times conversations like these are only take place in urban spaces. The girls that need to hear this content the most are in rural or township areas. And that's why we feel it's extremely important for us to include them, because we know that as we rise, we must always send the lift back down. The revolution, we're saying, as Not Yet Uhuru, is leaving no one behind. And we have a grassroots social movement of young women and girls. There are about 30,000 active members, and we want to use the community radio stations in the areas that they live in to give them a platform, give them a voice. There's a lot of wonderful work that they're doing, and train them to be advocates of social change. And lastly, where we take our inspiration are these girls. These are girl freedom fighters. On June 16, 1976, and we don't know any of their names. Who are they? And that makes me really, really sad that we only know Hector Peterson's sister, who was running next to Hector Peterson when he was shot, but we don't know her name. She's still alive, but we still don't know who she is. She was also there fighting for the same causes, and we want to build on the spirit of these girls. And yesterday I met a professor who from the US, who was talking about a story about, he's here to write a book about a freedom fighter. Someone I didn't know, so I'm happy that more stories of that are coming out. But he's a male, and this prisoner was talking about how they got arrested after June 16, and they were each put into individual cells, right? And they were very scared, not knowing what would happen. But there was this one girl singing. She kept singing and singing and singing and singing and singing, and to this day, nobody knows who she was or who she is. They suspect that she was killed. But for that young man in the cell, he says even throughout his political career, every time things were tough, he would remember that voice, that young woman singing and singing. So we're saying that we need to be remembered and acknowledged as people who contribute to this country and the political and economic freedom of this country. And our voices, our power as young women or as freedom fighters doesn't need to be the same. So she sang. She used that voice. She used that talent to keep the people moving. So with that, I say Not Yet Uhuru. We're coming for everything. All of it. We're coming. Any questions?
Sorry. Hi, thank you very much for that presentation. I just wanted to find out, Soul City, also being an organization that works in, obviously in the public health space, maybe you guys can talk us through entering the radio market and sort of what are the guiding principles that help you. Also, because I worry about the issue around numbers and M&E and what donors want and the answers and the big fat numbers that everybody's out for. And if those big fat numbers don't work and the pulling out of a project, are you strongly with the mandate that even when you send it out to traditional media, you're going to let the thing do its work and give it the support? Or is there going to be a fixation around getting a drive time slot, staying with that, and coming back and doing M&E and the numbers being the most important thing? Because, I mean, we've been involved in some projects and also in the public health work that I do. I just worry that, like, we don't speak the same language. There's a fixation around numbers and audiences and trying to get to them as soon as possible, when in actual fact we need to make, like, 10, 15 years investment. Like, I used to watch you when I was still, like, in primary school on Take 5, for example, and the work is, like, tremendous, you know. But when it comes to M&E, monitoring and evaluation and looking at project objectives and that kind of stuff, there's a fixation for numbers. We're not interested in necessarily making things live a lot longer. Yes, funds need to be accounted for in that environment, in the NGO environment, in the community radio space environment. So is there going to be like a sense of timeless support, if you want to put it, around this project? Or is it time sensitive? And then what happens when it kind of didn't reach its goals? Because that's my biggest concern.
Should we take every question as it comes? Or a few? You can answer. Oh, okay. All right. You are right. One of the reasons we moved away from public health to social justice is exactly what you are saying. Because even in the field of public health, people think public health is medicine. You know, even in the field of HIV, we know it's no coincidence that young black women between the ages of 15 to 24 are mostly at risk, but the bulk of the money still goes into ARV treatment. And we are creating this false dichotomy between treatment and prevention. But we like treatment, or funders like treatment, because you can measure. You know, you can buy a million tablets and have X number of patients and show what you did. You can say stock as Joe Ma, but, you know, you can't count what change it has made. So that is why for us, this is a venture, and I said it right at the beginning, where we want to monetize what we are doing. Ultimately, our goal is to have a feminist radio station, and we are looking at what the numbers mean. But we don't have illusions that we are going to be getting large numbers, you know, right at the beginning. We want to build steady, and we want to build with partners who are working with us. I mean, we worked with Dimitri, who's in the room, and there is an appetite, even from what are these people who are not those ones, to give content that is very meaningful for people. And it's because I think the consumer is also demanding just much more than an Omo ad with a woman that's doing the washing while the man is working in the garden. You know, they want their lives to be, you know, to be as real as possible.
I don't know. Am I cheering?
Okay, cool. Thank you for that presentation. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, just a question on the end goal of building, of, you know, having a radio station. So with the sort of moratorium out and, you know, ICASA not giving out any licenses, which, I mean, I think is a pity because, you know, this is a community of interest, but there have been so many licenses just, you know, in the previous session they were talking about how many licenses ICASA was just dishing out. And then here comes this new entrance, which is fresh, which is different, and then there's this moratorium. So what kind of, you know, I mean, how's that going to impact the end goal of having a radio station? Or are you going to sort of explore and, you know, try put pressure on digital sound broadcasting, or, you know, are you going to stay as a podcast? How does, you know, all of the regulations around getting a license going to affect the end goal for you?
We are quite new entrants, yes, and that is why when exactly our first lesson at the Gem Lab to realize that there's a moratorium, we went through podcasting. And in fact, after podcasting, we said, well, you could do vlogs and a whole lot of things you know, that could create the contact and get it out there. For us, an FM station makes sense because then you can reach as many people as possible. There's also issues of data costs in South Africa, so you want to make sure that people can access the content as much as possible. But we also believe that our plan needs to be short-term, medium-term, and long-term. We will join advocacy groups and other groups that are basically pushing ICASA to... In fact, we've presented to ICASA, who also liked the idea. But I guess we will have to work and see it as a medium to long-term strategy of getting them get the license. What the summit process is helping us do is, while we are waiting for the green light for FM licenses to come on board, is to do two important things, which I think as a new entrant with this innovation we must do, is to create as much content as possible. So the creation of content is very important. So in fact, in a lot of ways, we are not under pressure to say we've got an FM radio station now, because that's a content beast, you know, you must feed it every day. So we are creating, but also test the market and see, you know, and make mistakes and do all the things that needs to be done. So in a lot of ways, for this innovation, this period is a blessing in disguise. You know, it's a cocoon in saying, well, I'm sure our first podcasts are going to be terrible. You know, because you need to do it and do it and do it until you know, you may have the content, but if you want people to choose you, you know, you need to refine what you are doing. But the syndication with community radio and FM radio is the way that we think we will reach other audiences. Okay.
Three questions, but I know you well. Yeah. Okay. Firstly, the question about rural women and language, because obviously urban is more English, and as you move further rural, so how are you going to address that? Second thing is, obviously, it in a way, the internet's a bit of an echo chamber because nobody knows you there because you're not on a broadcast medium. How are you going to address that in advertising? And then the third part is, are you interested in partnering with people like myself who do branded content or content within the concept to actually push your agenda from outside of the Soul City family? Thank you.
All right. So as we create vlogs and content, and we link up with other people who can create the content for us and the podcast for us, they will speak in whatever language that they want. So Naledi Goes to Taung will be done in any language that Naledi and the Rise Young Girls in Taung speak. So we are not very precious about language. Partnerships, absolutely. We've just spoken to one young woman we met here who's in Nigeria, who's actually saying they cannot say they are feminists in Nigeria, especially on air. Could she get other feminists in Nigeria to do podcasts and give them to us, you know, to broadcast on our station? And, you know, right now it's like, yeah, the more the merrier, bring it on. And I think what I like about, particularly when we started and we went to Gem Lab and we said, well, we've got this idea, is when you meet people from Nigeria saying, oh, we like the idea, we're like, yeah, we were on the money, you know. Who knows who else is going to come to us in the Middle East and say, we also want to do something with you. So the community we want to bring of feminists is a community of practice rather than a geographic community. So partnerships, yes. Our partnerships with mainstream media and community radio will actually have a marketing purpose. But we've got 30,000 strong Rise Young Women that are funded. We've got a Rise talk show that attracts 3 million viewers on television. So the fortunate thing with us is that we are not just entrepreneurs who are trying something. You know, it will piggyback on our brand, on our name. So ideally, you want to give a show, a podcast, to a radio station, to a community radio station, and to then say, for more, this is where you can, this is where you can find us. You know, we've got other ambitions, of course, and another idea we tested at Gem Lab of being a mobile virtual network operator, an MVNO, you know, like a Trace mobile SIM card, where you can get a Soul City SIM card. And when you get it, you can get, like Rain right now, I don't know if people have seen Rain, you can get a SIM card, you know, a Soul City SIM card, you can, and then if you've got it, if you've spent 20 rands a month, you can get, you know, the radio on your mobile quite free. But the 30,000 young women whom we give tablets and data, you know, is already an audience of 30,000 people. It's also blog creators. But also as we get into these worlds, we are then able to market ourselves. The internet, I think right now the way people consume media is unlike before, you know, where people are, you know, getting the same thing on different places, you know. So we want to make sure that we also create, that's why we were saying there's a combination of vlogs and other things where you can post them on our website, you can talk about it on Rise Talk Show, you can, you know, get the Rise Young Women to talk about it on their Facebook and their WhatsApp pages, etc.
Thank you so much, Melebo and Thank you so much, Melebo and Khali, for that beautiful presentation.